Okay, welcome to Shiur and Maral Gurarye and Parshas Balak. So I wanted to take a look tonight at two shorter comments from the Maral, but they give us some insight into Bilam and his attempts to curse the Jewish people. So in Terechof Dalid, Pasuk Dalid, Bilam is about to utter one of his curses turned into blessings. And he says, Na'um Shamea Imre Kael, these are the words of the one who hears the utterances of God, Asher Machve Shakai Yechazeh, stated by one, meaning myself, who sees an image, a divine image, I have a divine prophecy, Nofel Ugluri Einoyim, I fall while my eyes are opened. So what does it mean, Nofel Ugluri Einoyim, my eyes are opened while I fall? So writes Rashi, Nofel Ugluri Einoyim, Shilto Kitaguma. The simple way to interpret this phrase, Nofel Ugluri Einoyim, is in accordance with the Targum, with the Aramaic translation. The Aramaic translation writes, the Targum writes, Unculus writes, Chazi Shechiv Umiskelele. Right? He sees when he's lying down, that's when the Giloi Shechila, that's when the revelation of God comes to him. And explains to Rashi, what does that mean? She'enira Allah Ela Balaylo Kishu Shochet. That Bilam's powers of prophecy were limited to nighttime dreams, right? In contrast to what the Torah itself says about Moshe Rabbeinu, a few parshios ago in Parshas Va'alotcha, where Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see God even while he was awake, Bilam, in contrast, would only really have these divine prophetic revelations when he was lying down, when he was in bed. So that's Nofel Ugluri Einoyim. Only when he's Nofel, only when he's falling, only when he's lying down, does he get this Gilui Einoyim that his eyes are opened up. Umid Rasha, that's a simple interpretation. Nice Rashi, the Midrashic interpretation is as follows. Kishahaya Nigla Olav, whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu would reveal himself to Bilam, Bilam was always so overwhelmed by the experience that he couldn't even stand on his own two feet. The Nofel Alpano, and he would collapse onto his face. In other words, literally Nofel, not Nofel in the sense of lying down, but Nofel literally in the sense of falling down. He would fall down on his face because of the intensity of the experience. Parenthetically, the fact that Rashi adds this Midrashic interpretation seems to address certain shot issues that are raised by the first interpretation as well. I mean, the most obvious question being, so if God only reveals himself to Bilam when he's in bed, so how do you explain everything that's going on in the Parsha? All of these klolos turned into brachos were all things that Bilam uttered when he was lying down at night. It doesn't sound like that from the Parsha. Sounds like he's going around from place to place on various different high peaks and mountains and looking out on the Jewish people. Sounds like that's in broad daylight. What, it only happened, he took his hat up to the top of the mountain and he laid down, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to him? Seems a little bit strange. So according to the second interpretation, it fits in very nicely with the Pshat. Okay, the Ribbono Shel Olam reveals himself to Bilam in the middle of the day. Bilam is overwhelmed by the experience. He falls on his face. And while falling on his face, that's what he utters, all of these things that are spoken about in the Parsha. Why was it?
Yeah. Did Rashi read into the
Targum
that it means at night?
I think Shechiv has the connotation of somebody who's lying in bed, not just somebody who's lying, on the floor, stretched out on the floor. But Shechiv carries the connotation. So somebody's lying down in dead Dafka. Right, the Shachar Chol, right, I guess you have that in the Pasuk. From Hashkizeno, right, also you have, so Shiva is apparently associated with, going to bed at night. So I guess that's the implication.
That would really, if Rashi wasn't forced to say that it means at night,
right,
then you'd have much more room to deal with that problem.
Right. In other words, you could go back to the Targum and say Shchiv just means you know, he fell on his face, you know, the way Rashi says in the second interpretation, right? I guess it's an implication of Siv that implies that you're on your bed at night.
Well, even like I think some of the other reports say, you could be sleepwalking, or your friend could be sleeping also.
Right. What's going on over here? Right. And okay, I mean, I guess it's just Rashi feels that there's an implication. Or, again, maybe, again, you'd have to do research and see if there's any basis for this. We know the different versions of the Targum Onkelos. Maybe Rashi was working with a different version of the Targum Onkelos that was a little bit more explicit than what we have over here. Okay, so Rashi then adds the following. So why was Bilam so overwhelmed by the experience? So Rashi adds as follows. So Fisha Haya Ariel, Umos Leos Nigla Allah becomes the Kufal of Fanof. Why did the experience of God coming to Bilam so knock him off his feet, literally? Because Bilam was uncircumcised, and it was disgusting, most, it was disgusting for God to reveal himself to someone uncircumcised like Bilam, while Bilam would be standing up on his 2 feet. Right? So, the fact that Bilam was an Ariel, the fact that he was uncircumcised, made it inappropriate for him to be standing while receiving this divine communication. Why are those 2 things connected? So here comes the Maral with the short, I think a very, very meaningful comment. So first writes the Maral, where do we get this idea from that being an Ariel, that being uncircumcised should make you knocked off your feet when God appears to you? Where do we see that? So writes the Maral, Sarei Gam BeAvram called them Shenimo, Malhaya BeKalach La'amot. Rashi in Parshas Lech Lecha makes a similar comment about Avram Avinu, that by Kol Avram Alpanov, when God reveals himself to Avram Avinu and tells him, you have a mitzvah circumcision, you have a, you know, you're going to have a child named Yitzchak, and, you know, you're going to circumcise yourself, and you're going to circumcise him as well. So it says, Vayipal Avram Alpanov, Avram Avinu falls down on his face. Why did he fall down on his face? Well, that's Rashi over there. Because the fact that he was uncircumcised, and the fact that he had just halakhically become uncircumcised, right? He had always been uncircumcised in reality, but now that he had a mitzvah, he was actually considered to be an Ariel because of his failure to perform the mitzvah. That now caused him to fall on his face. Again, that's the basis for this idea that you have in Rashi, that the lack of being circumcised, you know, makes the person unable to receive the divine presence. Umishinimo, Haya Hanavu Alav Me'umad. And we find that by Avraham Avinu, once he was actually circumcised, he was able to receive the Nevuah while still standing up. So it's true of Avraham Avinu, it's true of Bilam as well. And the Maral, Rashi Kosav Hatam, Mitnei Shahaya Orel Umos. Rashi over here writes that the fact that Bilam was an Orel, that he was uncircumcised, was, again, in his terminology, most, it made him disgusting in a sense, and therefore unable to receive the divine presence. It's like the Ribbono Shel Olam says, oh, you know, you're not dressed properly. How could I possibly come and have an audience with you? You're not circumcised. How could I have an audience with you? Maral himself writes, Nirulisha hu inyan pnimi. It seems to me that there's a deeper idea going on over here, why Dafka, the lack of a circumcision, why the Dafka, the fact that he was uncircumcised, would prevent Avraham Avinu and then later Bilam from being able to have a proper divine revelation. He called them Shanimo Avraham lo hoya lo habris, shehu mikasher shnei dvarim yachad, umit nezer hoya ruach hakodesh mapil es ha'adam. The whole point of the circumcision, as we know, is not just to have the surgery, but we call it a bris milah. What's a bris milah? The covenant of milah. Covenant, says the Maral, means that 2 parties are now able to forge a connection between one and the other. Lacking the milah, it's not so much that the person is uncircumcised per se, but it's the fact that you don't have the bris. The bris, the covenant, enables the 2 parties, the Ribbono Shel Olam and the human being on the other side, to be able to create a certain degree of connection between one and the other, and that connection enables the human being to be able to receive Nevuah with a certain degree of self-confidence, lacking not so much the surgery, but not so much the mila, but lacking the bris, a human being is not really able to receive properly the nevuah that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what you see over here, let's just read the next line and then I'll make a comment. Shehaya nimo v'haya imo abris, when, let's say in the case of Avraham Avinu, he was circumcised, and that not only removed the physical orla, the physical foreskin, but it also created and engendered the bris, the covenant between Avraham Avinu and the Ribono Shel Olam. Yesh lo shalom v'avas Hashem v'achva, that now gives the human being, Avraham Avinu, a degree of peace and love for Hashem, and achva, a sense almost of brotherhood, kiviyachol, with the Ribono Shel Olam. It's hard to, you know, you can't say that Avraham Avinu and God are equals, but at least they're somewhat more on equal footing, literally, v'hayachol amod, and therefore Avraham Avinu is able to stand up when HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with him, the Havain Zeh, and says the Maral, contemplate this idea, because there's something deeper going on over here. No, in other words, in fact, that's one of the answers to the question. You know, Avraham Avinu say Chazal was Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kula. He kept the entire Torah even before it was given. So, then the question asks the question. So, if that's the case, when God comes to him and says, go have a bris milah, Avraham Avinu should have said, been there, done that. You know, I did that one already, right? Clearly he didn't. So, why didn't he? And one of the answers to the question is, because by definition, you can't have a bris milah. Bris milah requires, it takes two to tango. It requires somebody on the other side. It's a covenant. Right? You can have a surgery. You know, you can cut off the foreskin, but that's not going to represent the bris until God says, I'd like to make a bris with you. Yeah. Oh, so let me carry forth that interpretation. Right? So, I think the major difference between Rashi and the Maral can be expressed with the following, thought experiment. Let's say Bilam had gone out and got himself a bris. Would that have now enabled him to be standing when HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to Bilam? So I think that's where you see very clearly the difference between Rashi and the Maral. But Rashi says, yeah, and I think that's what Rashi would say over here. Rashi would say, look, if the whole reason that Bilam couldn't stand when he received the Nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was because he was an Orel, he was uncircumcised, so now if he goes out and actually removes the foreskin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, oh, so now you dress properly, now we can have a relationship, and you know, at least it's good enough that if you're, you know, if I'm going to bestow my Nevuah upon you, you're not going to be knocked over by the experience. You could argue that, you could argue not, but you could argue that within Rashi. According to the Maral, it's not so much the fact that biologically, Bilam is circumcised or uncircumcised. The point is, Bilam doesn't have a bris with the Ribono Shel Olam, doesn't have a covenant. So he can circumcise himself from today to tomorrow, which is probably a painful process, right? He can circumcise himself as much as he wants, but, you know, all he's going to get out of the process is a mila and not a bris. He's never going to have a covenant with the Ribono Shel Olam, unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu extends to Bilam the opportunity to have a covenant. So according to the Maral, even if Bilam were to come back before the Ribono Shel Olam circumcised, he would still be knocked off his feet, you know, by virtue of the appearance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the bris, it's not the mila, which is the important point.
How could we understand that he's never just a physical problem that he has? He was never commanded to fix this in the problem. He never probably realized that it was part of Hashem. And furthermore, Hashem can see everything, so he's lying down and standing up. What's the difference? Why did he call me down?
Right, although again, what Rashi seems to be building, I mean, you could say that the Maral is just say, is, you know, what the Maral says explicitly is really what Rashi means also. You could say that. What's that?
Is that the Maral's
function? No, but sometimes the Maral says something that is different than Rashi. The Maral's not, you know, he's an independent contractor. You know, he's entitled to say his own title, you know, besides just explaining Rashi. Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that he. I don't know. I don't know. You could, You could explain even in this case that the Maharal sees themselves as interpreting Rashi, but I don't think so. I think if you read the Maharal, the impression one has is that the Maharal is saying Rashi says this, but I'm saying something different. But okay, well, whatever it is. But let's say you could say that Rashi is really saying what the Maharal says himself. You could say that. But I don't think it's so outlandish to say that Rashi is focused on the physical presence of the Orla. In other words, Chazal has an expression, Ma'utza hiya Orla. You know, the foreskin is something which is disgusting in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Meaning, it's not just that arbitrarily the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, told Jews to take off the foreskin as a sign of the covenant, and he could have done something else. No, there's something inherently, you know, disgusting, or there's some kind of barrier which the foreskin represents, which is appropriate, fundamentally speaking, to remove, and to the extent to which somebody like Bilam still has the foreskin on a fundamental level, that's going to prevent him from being able to receive the Nebuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How would you explain that? But just to give one example, so the Rambam writes in Mar Nebuchim that the reason behind the mitzvah of Bris Milah is that a man who is uncircumcised has a greater sexual appetite, and the whole point of Bris Milah is to curb the sexual appetite, you know, after the foreskin is removed, so the person doesn't have quite the same appetite for that aspect of life. And that's a good thing, because the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, wants us to curb, you know, doesn't want to get rid of the appetite, but he wants us to curb the appetite, you know, at least to an extent, you know, so that, you know, we're focused on more, you know, more obviously spiritual things than just the fulfillment of a this-worldly desire. Right, so if you understand like that, so then even from the perspective of somebody who doesn't have a mitzvah of Bris Milah, one can understand that the very presence of the foreskin is something which in some ways, you know, speaks to a person's greater obsession, you know, with that aspect of life, and, you know, it means that you're not as spiritual as you possibly could be. Right, so again, this is an explanation that would work on a fundamental level in terms of the, you know, what the, you know, why the Orla would be Ma'usa, why it would be something that would be considered to be disgusting, you know, from Rashi's perspective. Why don't you, Noach, as I'll say, was Noah and Mahu. So, was Noah and Mahu, yes, what's that? As well as Adam, so, what's that? I don't know if we say, I don't know if there's a chazal that says that Cain was no less mahul, but you know, his conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, isn't you know, maybe Taka he was falling, you know, in that particular case. So they come into the world on Yom HaShishi, so maybe they were Noldu Mahulim also, they're also born. Right. Right, so they had the same physical structure as other Marisim as well at that point in time. Yeah. Well, in the Midrashic interpretation, that's true. In other words, they're simply falling on his face. In the Pshat interpretation in Rashi, the impression one has is that even the quality of the Nebuah itself is not exactly the same. Meaning, I only experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu when I'm sleeping on my bed at night. I think that's the way Rashi means in his first interpretation. In which case, you know, he is an expression of what the, you know, what the Chumash says about other Nevi'im, b'chalom adam erbo, you know, that it's only through dreams that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicated. That, I think, would be a difference between the two interpretations in Rashi. Rabbi Akiva Eger writes in the Tshuva that one of the roles of the mitzvah of Bris Milah is to prepare the Jew to be able to learn Torah. In other words, to the extent to which a Jew is circumcised, it opens up his heart in some kind of metaphysical way to be able to learn and understand Torah better than had he not been circumcised. And Rabbi Akiva Eger says, as a result, therefore, if there's no father to ensure that a baby boy is going to be circumcised on the eighth day, then the obligation would revert to the grandfather, because we find that the grandfather has a greater degree of obligation in terms of Talmud Torah, of teaching his grandson. So the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, the mitzvah of ensuring that a young boy has a bris milah, two mitzvahs that go hand in hand, because that, after all, is at least one of the purposes of bris milah. That's not exactly the same thing that the Maral is saying, but it seems at least similar to the idea the Maral is bringing out over here. In other words, the Maral is saying that the mitzvah of bris milah creates a certain degree of connection between man and the Ribono Shel Olam that facilitates nevuah. So it's not a big jump to be able to say that in a similar fashion, fulfilling the mitzvah of bris milah creates a certain type of connection between man and the Ribono Shel Olam, insofar as one of the other avenues we have to understanding the will of the Ribono Shel Olam, which is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. We're not zocher to nevuah these days, but we can be zocher to Talmud Torah to try to understand on some level HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his will through Talmud Torah, and certainly bris milah provides us the opportunity to be able to do so. So again, this idea of the Maharal that that the mitzvah of bris milah is so much more than the mitzvah itself, but it also creates a bridge between us and the Ribono Shel Olam, which would not exist otherwise, is just a very, very beautiful concept and insight into the mitzvah of bris milah itself. What's that? Yeah, again, according to the Maharal. Yeah, according to the Maharal, I don't know that it's a criticism of the law, it's just a natural consequence. Meaning, you don't have this bris, so the result is you're going to fall on your face when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to you. That's just how it is. You know, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. What's that? Right, he says, right, but in other words, should he go out and fix it? He can't fix it. I mean, this is just the privilege that we're granted, that Bilam was not granted. You know, he doesn't have the opportunity to have a bris with the Ribono Shel Olam. Milah he can have, but again, according to the way we're understanding the Maharal, that wouldn't fix the problem. He'd still be, falling on his face in that particular fashion. Okay. Let's start the next Rashi I want to talk about with Avi Meiriv, after a brief introduction, and then we'll continue a little bit more after Meiriv. Right? So, the Tzukim go on to speak about one of those famous Tzukim that Bilam utters, Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkenotecha Yisrael. How goodly are your tents, O Yaakov, your sanctuaries, O Israel. And Rashi writes on Pasuk Vav, Amru Rabu Senu, our rabbis say, Nidir Chosav Shal Osa Rosa Anu Lameidin Mahaya Beliba L'Kalel. When we read the brachos that Bilam HaRosha uttered, we're able to extrapolate what he would have said had he been successful in trying to curse the Jewish people. He was trying to curse them. God turned the curses into blessings. So if we take the blessings and kind of turn them on their head, we can figure out what the blessing, what the curses rather, would have been had he been successful. Right, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned the klolos, the curses, into blessings, he didn't just take arbitrary curses and turn them into arbitrary blessings. No, and it was a mirror image of what he would have said, which he ends up saying as a blessing. Yeah, besides Pasuk Vav. Right? So says the Maharal, how does that apply? Let's apply this to the most famous pasuk that Bilam utters, Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkenotecha Yisrael. Right? So one interpretation in Chazal is that the Oholim and the Mishkanos, the tents and the sanctuaries to which Bilam referred, were the Bate Knesios and the Bate Midrashos. Right? Bilam looked out at the Jewish people and he said, wow, your shuls are awesome, your yeshivos and Bate Medrash are awesome, what a wonderful people you are that you have such institutions. So right from that now, Pirush, Bikesh Lomai Lo Yiyye Lohem Bate Knesios. Homai Matobu Alecha Yaakov. Lo Tishra Shkinoska Aleyem, Omer Mishkinoseko Yisrael. So applying the idea of Rashi, so it comes out that what Bilam slept to say initially was the following: I curse you, O Jewish people, that you shouldn't have any shuls and any bate medes, and I curse you, O Jewish people, that the Shechina, that the divine presence, should not dwell amidst the Jewish people. Right? When he blesses them, he says, your shuls, your yeshivos are beautiful, and mishkinosech or Yisrael, it's clear that the Shechina rests upon you. The curse would have been, you know, no more shuls, no more bate medres, and the Shechina should not be among you. After the Maral, why was Bilam so intent on getting rid of the shuls and the bate medres? Why, of all things, would he, you know, curse the Jewish people, no shuls and no bate medres? Is Bilam wanted to ensure that there would be no connection between the Jewish people and God's divine presence. He holds man sheyesh lo and bate kneisios or bate midrashos, hashchina v'Yisrael. As long as there are shuls and bate medrash in the Jewish people, so that means that God's divine presence, the Shechina, dwells among the Jewish people. And how do we know this? So that the Maral musters a series of mamari chazal, of statements from chazal, to illustrate this idea. So for that reason, first of all, we say, Gemara in Brachos, Avav, Chosman Shisrael Mispalim Ashkina Beinayim. Whenever Klal Yisrael daven, and here he doesn't quote, the kicker, but in the Gemara itself, the Gemara says, whenever the Jewish people daven with a minion, the Shechina is among them. Right? So in other words, the shul is an avenue to bring God's divine presence into the Jewish people. The chayim b'atei midrash is counting. The same is true of b'atei medrash. The Chazal also say, in Gemara Brachos, Tefches, Yom shechara de tamitash em HaKadosh Baruch Hu el arba amos shel halacha. From the day on which the tamitash was destroyed, the only thing that God really has as a foothold in this world is where, you know, literally the four cubits of halacha where people are sitting and learning Torah. So that brings God's presence into the world in a way which is only comparable to the Beis HaMikdash. We are reading, we say in Pirkei Avos, Shnayim Shiyoshrim Ve'oskim Batara Shechina Beinayim. Two people sit and learn, so they bring the Shechina between the two of them. V'chol Kavonas Dilom Chas B'Shol Omer Hasrish Shechina Mi'Yisrael V'hofach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Berecho Matobu Alecho Yaakov Mishkinosecho Yisrael. So in other words, you know, when Bilam's intent was to put a wedge between Klal Yisrael and the Shechina, right? Get rid of the Batei Medrash, get rid of the Batei Knesios. You know, these institutions that bring the Shechina into Jewish life should be gotten rid of. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Davka turns it around and says, you know, Bilam, you're going to bless the Jewish people that they should continue to have shuls, and they should continue to have Batei Medrash. Matovu Allah HaYakom Mishkinoseva Yisrael, and there will be a continuation of the connection between Klal Yisrael and the Shechina.
Yeah,
well, that's what Rashi writes at the beginning of the Sedra. It was a good shidduch between Baruch and Bilam, because basically they both really wanted the same thing. You know, Bilam figured, you know, if I can do what I want to do and get paid for it also, I mean, matzov manoi, that's wonderful. Okay, we're going to pick up on this point, Bezos Hashem, after we down the Nairis. So, stay tuned. Hey, welcome to the second part of the Maral Gurei Parshas Balak. So again, we were looking at Rashi and Chof Dawid, Pasuk Vav, and the accompanying Maral, where the Rashi writes that from the brachos that Bilam ends up uttering, one can get a sense of what the klalos would have been. So the pasuk Matovu Alecho Yaakov Mishkinoseicho Yisrael, which speaks of the greatness of shuls and bate medres, it becomes clear that Bilam's intent was to curse the Jewish people, that the bate kneisios and the bate midrashos ceased to function. You know that he was trying to get rid of the shuls and the yeshivos. And why would that be a focus of Bilam? So says the Maral, because we find various statements in Chazal that tefillah of the tzibur and that Talmud Torah bring the Shechina into Klal Yisrael. So clearly these institutions which foster Tfilah B'Tzibur and foster Talmud Torah, are instrumental in bringing the Shekhinah into Klal Yisrael. So if these were to be eliminated, the Shekhinah would be, separated from Klal Yisrael. That's exactly what Bilam was looking to do. It sounds like the simple interpretation is that shuls and batei medrash have been part of Klal Yisrael since time immemorial, meaning even then when they had a mishkan, right, they had things called shuls and batei medrash that existed in Klal Yisrael, meaning if you wanted to learn, certainly you didn't go to the mishkan to learn, right? It sounds like even there was a concept of davening, which it was almost tikkun. Goes back to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. So apparently they had special places to daven, which were not necessarily, the Mishkan. There were places that were separate, both the Knesset and both the Midrashas, that were part of the fabric of the Jewish people even back then. That's, I think, the simple implication, in this Rashi. Let's just talk about one or two things with regard to this idea which we just mentioned, then we'll see there's a little bit more in the Maral, a slightly different idea about both the Midrashas and both the Knesset. First of all, I think it's striking that this Maral actually fits very nicely with the comments in the Maral we saw earlier. Meaning, in the last section of the Maral we saw, how the Maral describes how Bris Milah creates a connection between the individual Jew and the Ribbono Shel Olam, to the point where the individual Jew with the Bris Milah is able to experience God more readily. He can have Nevuah. And we mentioned in that context the Rabbi Akiva Eger, who says that Bris Milah opens up the person's neshama to be able to experience Talmud Torah in a much more meaningful way. Here, the Maral is saying a somewhat similar idea on the national level, meaning Tfilah B'Tzibur and Talmud Torah create as well a connection between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. What Bris Milah does for the individual, Tfilah B'Tzibur and Talmud Torah does for the community as a whole. And again, the Batei Knesset and Batei Midrashos, which are instrumental in playing that role, help create that chibur, that connection, which is so important. So again, just a very similar theme to what the Maral had mentioned in the first Maral, which we saw tonight. I also want to bring out the following. Again, maybe it's just a function of the fact that my parnasa is dependent on Batei Knesset and Batei Midrashos. But I think the point I'm about to say is a valid one. I think that's one that, is important to make. Strictly speaking, the proofs that the Maral brings that Batei Knesset and Batei Midrashos bring the Shekhinah into Klal Yisrael, strictly speaking, don't really say that. Strictly speaking, the Maral has brought proofs that Tfilah B'Tzibur and that Talmud Torah bring the Shekhinah into Klal Yisrael. And if a person wanted to be a stickler or a nudnik, or however you want to put it exactly, a person could say as follows. What would be so terrible if the shuls and batei medrash, cease to exist? The point is not the shuls and the batei medrash. The point is the tefillah b'tzibur and the Talmud Torah. So good. So Bilam will be successful, let's say, Chas V'Shalom, in annihilating the shuls of the Batei Medrash. We can still have the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael. So we'll get together in somebody's garage and we'll daven. And we'll get together in somebody's living room and we'll learn. And the Shekhinah will still be in Klal Yisrael. Why this? Well, yes and no. In other words, does that mean it has Kedusha based on Medrash? In other words, if you and I sit down to learn at the dining room table, so does our dining room now has Kedusha based on Medrash with all of the halachas that implies? Right? So I can't sit down and have dinner in my dining room anymore because people now use it as a bet medrash, right? Again, if I make a Friday night minyan in my living room, so now all of a sudden my living room has kedusha space at Knesset. You know. What's that? Right, exactly, right? So what? Right, right. In other words, there's a catch 22 over here, right? The minute you say that it's a base on Medish or base on Knesset, boom, you know, it'll be out of business. You know, there'll be a breakaway, and they'll make somebody else is going to start a Friday night meeting in their garage. You know, but again, you know, again, if one wants to play devil's advocate for a moment, you know, so what would be so it's not the Bokeh Knesios or the Bokeh Midrashos. It's the gathering and the learning that goes on in those places that connects us to the Shekhinah. So in theory, what would be so terrible if the Klal of Bila Marasha came true? So I think what you see from the combination of Rashi and the Maral is the following idea, which you would think is poshut, but in Jewish communal life today apparently is not so poshut, that, you know, it's not just about the Tzilah, the Tzibur, and the Talmud Torah. Tzilah, the Tzibur, and Talmud Torah will suffer immeasurably. Yes, in theory you can still have it, but the quality and the quantity of Tzilah, the Tzibur, and Talmud Torah will suffer immeasurably without the institutions of Bate Knesios and Bate Midrashos. So in other words, even though in theory, you know, Bilam could have cursed the Jewish people to get rid of Bate Knesios and Bate Midrashos, and we wouldn't have those institutions, but, you know, we could still keep up Tzilah B'Tzibur, and we can still keep up Talmud Torah, it wouldn't be the same, right? Now, there's something about an institution whose sole purpose is to promote Tzilah B'Tzibur and Talmud Torah that you can't just duplicate in your dining room, you can't duplicate in your garage, in your basement, you know, whatever it happens to be. You know, there's something about these institutions which is incredibly important for Jewish life. Now again, this may go without saying, except for the fact that in much of our community, and I don't mean our Glorious Heart community specifically, but in our broader from community today, there seems to be a sense that the institutions are not so important. You know, we can daven anywhere, we can learn anywhere. You know, the Bokeh Medrash and the Bokeh Knesios, you know, they're just sort of, you know, maybe even antiquated. You know, why do we have to be so focused on a building and an institution? And the answer is, you see clearly from here that it's not going to be the same. You know, you can't just learn and daven, you know, wherever you want and expect the connection to the Shekhinah to be of the same level. What's that? Right, if it's not a Tzibur which is davening together. No, so I think you're thinking Moginavos. Moginavos has to be in a minyan kavua. To connect to the shul in some way or another, right? In other words, you know, the shul represents Tzilah B'Tzibur, whether Tzilah B'Tzibur happens to be going on at this particular time or not, but that's the importance of the Tzilah of the shul. I just want to bring that out. Again, maybe it's self-evident. I don't know, but I think it should be stated. Hold, another reason why Bilam was so bent on eliminating the shuls and Bokeh Midrashos is the nation Emma Kol Kol Yaakov Ayadayim Day Esau. We know famously that another bracha that was given by Yitzchak Avinu is the voice of Yaakov, the hands of Esau. As long as Yaakov is raising his voice in tefillah and learning in the shuls and in the Bokeh Midrashos, so the enemies of the Jewish people are not able to overcome the Jewish people. They're not able to harm them. But if the Kol Yaakov is not heard in the shuls and the Bokeh Midrashos, so then the hands of Esav are able to be effective against them. So that's why Bilam had a vested interest in eliminating the shuls and the Bokeh Midrashos, because again, his whole interest was to destroy the Jewish people, not only spiritually, that was the first shot in the Maharal, that the shuls and the Bokeh Midrashos cement the connection spiritually between Klal Yisrael and the Ribono Shel Olam, but the shuls and the Bokeh Midrashos also cement the physical. They also represent the physical salvation of the Jewish people. You know, we are protected from our enemies when the shuls and the Bokeh Midrashos are functional, you know, with the cult Tefillah and the cult Torah, which keeps them going. So certainly to the extent to which Bilam wanted to assault of the Jewish people physically, you know, getting rid of this line of defense was incredibly important. Here too, in the second interpretation, I think the Ha'ara, which we made with the first interpretation, is also very striking. The lashon of the Maral is, again, quoting from Chazal, Chozman she hakol kol Yaakov abotek nesios of abotek negroshos hein sonen is pakim li Yisrael. Right, the exact lashon of the Bereishis Rabba is L'chu v'chizru abotek nesios of abotek negroshos shalohem. Go and see what's going on in the shuls and the abotek negroshos. If you see people davening and learning, so then you know that the Jewish people are going to be protected. And here too, it's interesting to note that Chazal emphasized the shuls and the batei medrash. The other one could have said, if Jews are davening and learning, so we're protected. What do I care? They're davening here, they're davening there. So, you know, let them daven wherever they want. Let them learn wherever they want. Apparently, it's something about strengthening the batei knesios and the batei midrashos specifically that protects us from the enemies. It's not just the davening and learning. Is strengthening the institutions of davening and learning, which keeps us strong. And again, whatever the metaphysical explanation for that is, there's certainly a very strong sociological explanation for that. It's not just the davening and the learning, it's the fact that we come together in a set place to engage in davening and learning that strengthens our identity as Jews with Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. Perhaps it's as much that, or at least in part that, which contributes to our being able to stand up against our enemies, you know, in addition to the actual Tefillah and Talmud Torah, which is able to protect us. It's the Tefillah and the Talmud Torah, but the group identity that's part of that Tefillah and Talmud Torah. And there, you know, it doesn't really suffice. It's just davening in a living room. It's the shul specifically, it's the Beis Medrash specifically, as an institution that's able to protect us against the enemy being able to overrun us. Right. It very much fits in with the insistence of the Tosfos Yom Tov that the Gzeres HaKatan came about because people were talking during davening, where the shuls were destroyed during HaKatan because people were talking during davening. You know, this is our bulwark against enemies. You know, if you're gonna interrupt and destroy the davening, you know, which is our protection, so that's certainly not going to be able to work. Yes. Well, he will have the Lemikos Shmav, Yechezkel.
Right.
100%. I think the takeaway from tonight certainly is that, you know, it's not just Tefillah, it's not just Talmud Torah, but it's Tefillah and Talmud Torah in the context of the Shul and of the Medrash, which, you know, not only binds us to the Ribono Shel Olam spiritually, but also protects us physically, you know, from those who would seek to destroy us. Right. It's always preaching to the choir. But nonetheless, I think the point is well taken in both points that the Maharal is bringing in.
Is there a point that ever, like, if let's say a house or whatever is used to feel with the word, is there a point, at what point do you start saying that it becomes a mitzvah, it becomes a shul, at what point? I mean,
well, so there are a few things. First of all, we have to... Right. So I think the one point is it would have to be designated exclusively for that. So in other words, sometimes a person has a room in the house which is only used for learning, which is only used for davening. You know, if you have a shtibul that's next to the house, so that's set aside. Rav Chaim Volozhin also held that for something that kedushas beis hakneses, it requires an aron and a sefer Torah. So in other words, by definition, even if you have a boardroom, you know, in your office, where the only thing we do in this boardroom is daven mincha every day, but there's no sefer Torah there, so we've not had kedushas beis hakneses, even if the only thing that we do there, you know, is to daven. So those
are...
Right. But in other words, but even there, the primary use was to daven in, and just, you know, we allow other things to take place there as well. I think with the meeting that takes place in the living room, I think the average person would define what's going on as, this is a living room. And we also, you know, daven on a regular basis in this living room, among other things that we do there. You know, it's, the question is, what's the ikar and what's the tasel, you know, in terms of what's being done there. I assume he did not view it as a Beis HaKnesses, a Beis HaKnesses. It was a place where we died, you know. Okay, well, I'll pick up next week.